हरे राम सनातन सनातन सभेयं नरवावाहे तेजस्वी नावगे नमस्तु मा विद्विषावाहे ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे
Just at that time, however, the island-born Vyas, a monarch, came there in course of his wanderings. Section 198. Vaishampayana said, "Then all the Pandavas, the illustrious king of the Panchalas, and all others there present, stood up and saluted with reverence the illustrious Rishi Krishna Dvaipayana. The high-souled Rishi, saluting them in return, and inquiring after their welfare, sat down on a carpet of gold. Commanded by Krishna Dvaipayana, of immeasurable energy, those foremost of men all sat down on costly seats. A little after, O monarch, the son of Prishata, in sweet accents, asked the illustrious Rishi about the wedding of his daughter." Right? So here's like the standard, very simple form, but standard reception, how someone is going to deal with greeting someone like that. So then they're coming, they're standing. Then after sitting, he also asks them to sit. They exchange conversation. Then get down to business. Right? You know, because it's just normal human interaction like that. Business is always after normal human interaction. Emergency, maybe it may take some precedence, but it has to actually be an emergency. Not that you feel it's an emergency. Right here, the king is, his daughter, in his mind, is about to be married to five husbands, so that's not a really good idea. So then, he could just immediately just butt in and say, you know, what about this? Right? You know, that would be comparable to anything that we could probably say is important. Right? Does that make sense? Right? But it's not. That's why these examples are given, so that everybody can get the proper balance, you know, the proper perspective. Otherwise, then it's okay, that's nice in normal times, but when I'm feeling a little bit, you know, something, some agitation, some disturbance, then that means it's, you know, time for me to just blabber. I don't have to worry about etiquette. I don't have to worry about nothing, because right now this is the most important thing, right? So what could be more strange for a very religious king than his daughter is marrying five men, right? This is after, you know, all this arrangement. Then his daughter's taken away. She doesn't know who they are. Then finally, after much endeavor, he finds out who they are. Then having found out who they are, then it's the Pandavas. He must be so happy. Then going from this great means normal to great happiness that someone actually won the daughter according to the mark. Then the anxiety of who are they. Then the happiness of knowing they're the Pandavas. Then immediately the next moment that they're going to all five marry him. Now you tell me you've ever had a situation equal to this or more than this, emotionally. On this level, anyone can say, raise your hand. If you have, then yes, go ahead. Then just butt in, cut everybody down. It's all your scene. You're the center. You're the victim. You're the all in all. It's all about you. Okay? But if not, then etiquette still must be followed. Right? And it's followed nicely. He's saying with sweet tones here, sweet accents. You know? Doesn't mean that, okay, that I put on my crocodile grin, that, you know, this is all so artificial and I just want to say like this. But artificial means artificial what? It's artificial for me to not act like an animal. That's what's artificial. Just say it. I, as a nice, true, blue, you know, born, dyed in the wool, Malecha and Yavana, you know, Haribo, woohoo, yeah. I cannot tolerate following all this etiquette, but it's just too human for me. That's all. Say that. Then everyone can go, yeah, excuse me, go for it, hey. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? That's the real meaning. One can't follow these etiquettes. One is not human. That's why you can't follow it, because we're not human. That's why you follow the devotional process. It's the only thing powerful enough to turn an animal into a human. Right? Atato Brahma Jigyasa. Human life starts there. It does not start one nanosecond before that. Nothing. Say what you want. You like it, you don't like it. It feels good, it doesn't feel good. But that's reality. You follow Varnashram, you inquire about the stream, you're human. You don't do that, you're not human. Doesn't mean that you're banned from devotional service. It's so great. Everybody. Hanuman's a monkey, Garuda's a bird. You know, there was that great King Cobra that was a disciple of Narad Muni. There was that dog, St. Shivananda Sen's dog. I mean, you know, there's so many examples, right? The Kanaras, right? They're not human like that. They're all devotees. So that's not the problem. The problem is, don't take the human airs and the attitude in your face if we're not human. You know, or take it, but take it from the platform of being a Malechan Yavana. Right? But don't try to mix the two to try to get from both and your prestige and all that. It just makes social trouble. Anything not according to the Vedas, the Shruti, the Smriti, the Puranas, the Pancharatra, it's just a disturbance. We don't care who you are. We don't care if it's politically correct or not. It's a disturbance. Know that. It's just a disturbance. Say what you like. Get around with your group of friends that's everybody, right? It only takes one other person that agrees with you. And then everybody says. That's all it is. It's only one. When you say everybody says, think about it. How many? Can you count them even on one hand? Do you need more than one hand? No. Because how many people do you actually have as friends? Close friends you can really count on. Can you count them on one hand? Or do you even need one hand at all? Right? Does that make sense? So therefore, that's why these things are so important. It's not enough to be an animal with some feelings, and therefore you got a mouth, therefore you can shoot it off. It's not enough. It's just not enough. Right? So here it is. This is a very intense situation. Very intense. And still, all the etiquette is followed. Right? Yudhishthira, they're all there in the potter's house, you know, and that, and then the prime minister comes, you know, when he finds out who he is, and he says, oh, first, come on, let's, you know, do the worship, do all the formalities. Right? Then afterwards, then he told them, yes, we're just some Brahmins. Does that make sense? These things are important. Prabhupada's given them to us. It's not a game. It doesn't matter. We don't like it. It doesn't matter that our mommy didn't do this. It didn't matter that our punk friends down on the corner didn't do this. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter who you are, where you came from. It doesn't matter. Only thing that matters is Krishna and Krishna's satisfaction. So that means Krishna's culture. That's all that matters. Never for a moment think that your feelings are more important. Right? They're important to you. They must be dealt with. The Vedic culture deals with the individual. But how are we going to deal with one individual at the expense of everyone else? Is that right? If we want to say, yes, we're liberal, we're modern, we deal with the individual, then that means every individual has the right to be dealt with. So that means, then you got to make a compromise that works for all the different individuals. Then you can say you're liberal. Otherwise, you're not. You're just a fanatic, left-wing, you know, madman. Who just has found some new identity so that they can give their life some worthwhile in its natural day-to-day boring uselessness. Sitting around, what do? Nothing. What is it, that song? Monday nothing, Tuesday nothing, Wednesday nothing, you know, like that. Right? That's what it is. We sit around, then nothing to do. So what do? Hey, make some trouble, like that. That's the Bengali saying. Naikaj koi baj, right? Koi is that double puffed rice. So it really looks big. You know, it looks like something happened, but 1 kilo of it's like a pile this big. So you have nothing to do, make this double puffed rice, right? Looks like a lot, but it's actually got no substance. Does that make sense? So we're just saying this so that we understand that there's no real reason that we can't take these teachings and use them. They're as valid today as they were any other time. Otherwise, then you would have to say the souls today are more valuable than they were before, or less valuable. Souls aren't changing. It's Kali Yuga, so what? You know, what has that got to do with anything? What does that have to do with your making commitment to follow Krishna's culture? What does that got to do with... Oh, nobody else does. Who's this nobody else? Name the nobody else. Right? I've been in China. They follow it, basically, in their own funny way. Their etiquette. Right? Even the government's throwing you out of the country. They do so pleasantly with a smile. So that right there is 1 billion people. Right? The Indians basically themselves do it. That's another billion. That's 2 billion people out of 6. We must remember, keep it in proportion, 250 million are Americans on the planet. Right now, 2 billion. That means 8 times that. They follow this as their natural culture. Right? Then we have the rest of Asia. Throw in another billion. Half the planet. Where is this? Nobody follows it. I want to hear about it. Africans follow it in Africa. South Americans follow it in South America. Central Americans follow it. Who doesn't follow it? Yankees, British, Australians. That's it. The Anglo-Saxons don't follow it. Say that. Be honest. Right? This is the thing to be this day. Honest, right? Straightforward. Yes, we, you know, how you say, 300, you know, million people on the planet would represent the whole, you know, humankind of the universe. We don't, you know, really feel comfortable following it because it doesn't really fit in with our hedonistic ways. Right? And then everybody should go, oh, okay, yeah, cool, man, okay, go for it, yeah. Bite my head off, you know, enjoy it. Okay. Does that make sense? So, that's the reality. That's why Prabhupada did that. What was it? Tamal Krishnamara, that famous one? Tamal Krishnamara saying there's this and that and there's so many things. It's just so happening and it's just so intense. And that Prabhupada said, yes, there's this cosmic creation, unlimited. In that cosmic creation, 1/4 of that cosmic creation is the material existence. Right? In that, there's Mahavishnu. Coming from his pores are an unlimited little, you know, has universes like mustard seeds, right? And then, in one of these mustard seeds, we go inside that, then there's 14 planetary systems. Of that, there's 1 planetary system. That has 9 dwipas, right? And this one, of one is the smallest, right? And on that, then we have Bharatakanda, right? Then in that we have India. India, we have 29 states. In one state, there's Bengal. In Bengal, there's a district called Nadia, right? And in that district, Nadia, there's this place called Mayapur. And in Mayapur, there's the Lotus Building. And in the Lotus Building, there's this one room, right? Where Prabhupada is staying. And in this room, there's one guy who thinks he's the Lord of everything, and he's pointing at Tamal Krishna. Right? That's our position. Anything else is illusion. Anything else is illusion. That's the difference in the Kali Yuga. Only is that people are so proud, they think that they're special, than anybody else has ever been, everybody else ever will be. That's the difference. So it's simply false ego. It's nothing to do with reality. Because whatever you say you can't do, there's millions of people doing it. Millions of people doing it. Right? Actually, billions of people doing it. Whatever you say, I can find somebody who's doing it, and doing it comfortably. Right? Oh, it looks funny if the ladies cover their head and go out in public, right? You go, all the Muslims in the West, right? They're over there driving around in the Mercedes-Benz. They've made it, right? They own Harrods, not white guys. Right? They're driving around like that. They're going to all the big fancy shops, and what are they doing? They all got their heads covered. Every last one of them. Right? And it's not even just a nice colored sari. This is some black shmata is what they're wearing. Right? Not very attractive at all. And they're happily doing it. So whatever you say can't be done. It's going on. Right? Oh, we can't be fanatic about what we eat. We got meat eaters that are fanatic about their meat. Right? It's not kosher, it's not halal, they won't look at it. Right? And these are meat eaters. You know what I'm saying? The idea of vegan, that's, you know, standard for the Buddhists down in Sri Lanka. That's their diet. Right? So no onions, no garlic. That's to them normal lifestyle. Oh, don't be fanatic. Understand? You know, in Asia, it's very standard. Girls can be in their 20s, finish school, went to university, never even touched a guy. Never. Standard. Oh, it's not possible. That's the point. It's going on everywhere. It's just whether you're interested or not. That's it. You're interested to follow? You can. You're not interested? You can find a million excuses. If you are interested, you can find a million reasons how it's possible. It's all up to you. It's your choice. That's the point. That's the jiva. It's your choice. Yes? No? A little after, O monarch, the king of Prishata, in sweet accents, asked the illustrious Rishi about the wedding of his daughter. He said, "How, O illustrious one, can one woman become the wife of many men without being defiled by sin?" Right? Straightforward, right there. So, see, the point is, you can be straightforward, but it's said nicely. He said in sweet accents. He just got right to the point. He didn't beat around the bush. So that's the point. Vedic culture, you can be very direct or you can be very indirect. Whatever is useful. But the point is it's said nicely. Right? Said nicely. Oh, tell me truly all about this. Right? You know, so he's not saying, is this right that they're saying they're going to marry this? He says, tell me, how is it possible that one man, one woman can marry many? You know, tell me the truth about this. What's the facts on it? Understand? The importance of the question again. Right? Very, very important tool. Something you're doubtful about, question, but it's done nicely. Right? You want to instruct somebody but you're not so sure about the position, the ego, questions. Or, you know, they're in a good position, you know that they're trained nicely, but you're just checking, questions. You know? Hearing these words, Vyasa replied, "This practice, O king, being opposed to usage and the Vedas, hath become obsolete." So it means it was followed at one time. "I desire, however, to hear what the opinion of each of you is upon this matter." So Vyasadeva himself is then opened with it's opposed to usage in the Vedas, right? Because the principle is this feminine principle is dependency and that focus, right? It needs to be focused. So possession is very encompassing. So for a woman to be attached to more than one man would need a lot of qualification to be able to do that and be able to separate this. You know, it would take a lot of discrimination. So he's saying it's obsolete. Means at one point it could be followed, but now it's not. Right? Because now we're dealing in the Dwapara Yuga, the end, very end of Dwapara Yuga, beginning of Kali Yuga. But before this, then, in other ages, it was followed. Right? We've seen it. There's some examples in the Bhagavatam of it. And so then, Vyas, instead of himself starting to speak, because he could speak, but he doesn't know what the emotional position is of everybody, you know, or that needs to be brought out. He may know, but nobody else necessarily. So therefore, you find out what everybody else has to say. Having heard their angle, then you can say something. Otherwise, you'll make your point. Everyone may not agree with it. It's a good point, so they may not speak. So you may not be able to convince them. Does that make sense? It's an important element. You find out what is. If you know it's an emotional issue, find out what everybody has to say. Then having heard, then you can do something to make sure and pull everything together, right? Because synthesis, if you have a thesis, then there has to be synthesis, that everything that's opposing, you have to be able to bring it together. Right? But unless you know what it is, right? Because in the beginning, it's an emotional issue, they'll all say. But once you've made your point, then they may go, okay, maybe what I'm thinking is stupid, this, that, but you may not have convinced them. But at least enough to know that it's okay, I can't go with the same drive, but maybe I won't be able to get rid of it. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So when you're dealing emotionally, then you hear others first. It is logically, then you can either speak first or let the others, depending on what you want to do. The point is, you hear from the others, then you know how to speak. Does that make sense? The idea is speak something useful. Hearing these words of the Rishi, Drupad spoke first, saying, right? Because he before said, what is it? He didn't say like his point. Yeah, this is sinful nonsense. These Pandavas are saying they're going to do this. Like that. So now he speaks because he's the senior most. Drupad spoke first, saying, the practice is sinful in my opinion, being opposed to both usage and the Vedas. O best of Brahmanas, nowhere have I seen many men having one wife. The illustrious ones also of former ages never had such a usage amongst them. The wise should never commit a sin. I, therefore, can never make up my mind to act in this way. This practice always appeareth to me to be of doubtful morality. Right? He's saying, I couldn't agree with this because it looks doubtful. Right? But he's not saying, because there's a sage here, he's not saying, this is absolute, this is the way it is. Right? Because the king in court, that's the way he has to be. But because the sage is here, Brahmins are here, so therefore he's saying, this is what it appears to me. You know, and then they should confirm that or give him some more, information that would make him broaden his outlook, right? Because that's the point. Brahmins and Kshatriyas work on this, that they may have a viewpoint, but it's always open for being expanded. Does that make sense? We've gotten it from authority, but we can expand it. Does that make sense? You know, that's the position. Vaishya Shudras, they may or may not, depending upon their position. As devotees, naturally they can because of the Brahminical mentality. But at the same time, as by conditioning, tendency is not because of the ignorance that's there. Right? They get attached to something, it's the way it goes. After Drupad had ceased, Drishtadyumna spoke, saying, O bull amongst Brahmanas, O thou of ascetic wealth, how can, O Brahmana, the elder brother, if he is of a good disposition, approach the wife of his younger brother. The ways of morality are ever subtle, and therefore we know them not. We cannot therefore say what is conformable to morality and what not. We cannot do such a deed, therefore, with a safe conscience. Indeed, O Brahmana, I cannot say, let Draupadi become the common wife of five brothers. So he's also not convinced. He's working on the thing, is that the elder brother and his wife are like mother and father to the younger brother. Right? Just like the child could always go into the parents' room, no matter what they're doing. Right? Even if they're being intimate, the child walks in, it all's about the child. Right? So therefore, the younger brother could go into the room where the elder brother is with his wife, because he's like the child. But the rule is the older brother will not go into the room when the younger brother is with his wife. Right? That's why Balaram will never go around where Krishna is with Radharani. You never see Balaram where Radharani is when Krishna is there. Right? Because that's the rule. Right? But Krishna can go anytime wherever Balaram is. Does that make sense? So that's the etiquette. So that's his point. So if they're all married to the same wife, how would the older brother go? Because the same wife is the younger brother's wife, so how is it he's dealing? So that's his doubt. And he's also saying morality is very, very subtle, so it's hard to understand. So in this case, I can't understand it, so I can't have any confidence on it. Right? Yudhishthira then spoke, saying, my tongue never uttereth an untruth, and my heart never inclineth to what is sinful. When my heart approveth of it, it can never be sinful. I have heard in the Purana that a lady named Jatila, the foremost of all virtuous women, belonging to the race of Gotama, had married seven rishis. So also an ascetic's daughter, born of a tree, had in former times united herself in marriage with 10 brothers, all bearing the same name of Prachetas, and were all of souls exalted by asceticism. Or foremost of all that are acquainted with the rules of morality, it is said that obedience to superior is ever meritorious. Amongst all superiors, it is well known that the mother is the foremost. Even she hath commanded us to enjoy Draupadi, as we do anything obtained in alms. It is for this, O best of Brahmanas, that I regard the proposed act as virtuous. Because within the realm of morality, the mother is considered the foremost. She is considered, for what the debt you owe your mother is greater than the father. Right? It's considered 10 times greater. Because the trouble that the mother goes through, both physical and emotionally, is much greater than what the father goes through. Right? Because the father is independent. So because of independence, then they can maintain, you know, themselves, you know, whatever the situation. Women being dependent, then it's always moves by the scene. So when things go nice for the kid, they're very happy. When it's not nice for the kid, then they're more anxiety. Does that make sense? So the experience they go through is 10 times greater than that of the father. Therefore, this that 10 times more debt is owed. So then that's why then it mentions here, is that amongst all superiors, the mother is the foremost, right? In that way. That doesn't mean the boss, in the way of, you know, she administrates the whole thing. Does that make sense? We have to be able to distinguish between foremost and what, right? We can say, in mountains, the Himavat is foremost. We can't say, okay, well, therefore, it's also the best, it's the foremost in oceans also. Right? Or foremost in, you know, metals, or foremost in, you know, people. No, he's the best, greatest of mountains, but knowing him as a person, no one says he's the greatest. Does that make sense? So you have to be distinguished. So in this area, what you owe emotionally, your mother's the greatest. So now they're dealing with this act, the element of morality, which is extended sense gratification. Right? So the epitome of extended sense gratification is the mother. Because she's the one who extends the sense gratification to you, the greatest of anybody. Right? Therefore, in the realm of morality, she's the most important. Right? Of course, she's trained. But even if she's not, then even within the realm of the Mlechas, you know, what she says goes amongst the Mlechas. Right? Does that make sense?
Yes.
Like that. It is for this, O best of Brahmanas, that I regard the proposed act as virtuous. Kunti then said, the act is ever so as the virtuous Yudhishthir hath said. I greatly fear, O Brahmana, lest my speech should become untruth. How shall I be saved from untruth? Right? So as a Kshatriya, they're worried about truth, but also as a woman, she doesn't want her, you know, status to be dropped because she's spoken untruth. Like that. So you do see the underlying feminine element, but you are dealing in the feminine element here of marriage and all that. So therefore, it's something to consider. Right? It was something else, it was some philosophy or that, you could say, oh, you're just acting as a woman, that's why you're worried about it. But in this case, because you're dealing in morality, acting as a woman is fine, because that's what you're dealing with here. Right? Morality is there because there are women. No women, no need of morality. You know what I'm saying? You have a bunch of guys living under the tree, they don't worry about stealing each other's copan. That's all they got. Right? They come to their tree, someone else is sitting onto it, you know, fine, they go to the next tree, no big deal. Right? But as soon as you add women into the equation, then all the tenets of morality come. Right? Like that. The whole Varnashram system is there because there are women. Right? Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha is there because there are women. Right? That's all. Otherwise, you see on Tapa Loka, it's just guys sitting around. That's all. They don't worry about all this stuff. They sit around, they perform their austerities, they do the yagyas, they talk philosophy, you know, Haribol. That's it. You understand? They don't worry about fences, you know, who's what or anything. You know, don't take thy neighbor's donkey, don't take their neighbor's wife. They don't have a donkey, they don't have a wife. You know, so they don't have a fence, they don't have a house, they don't got nothing. So therefore, it's no problem. They only have to worry about the mice, right? You know, like that, coming and taking, chewing on the mice. That's it. Does that make sense? So the whole thing comes because of that. The whole social structure, the whole economic structure, the whole sense gratification, all the rules, all the morality, all everything is because there are women. That's why when you're dealing with this, it's the most important element to consider, right? Then you could possibly take that one statement right there, looking at it, and then understand why our own social system doesn't function. Because it doesn't consider women, right? The social functioning is there only because there are women. Does that make sense? Very simple point. Then, when they had all finished speaking, notice also Kunti spoke after Yudhishthir, because, you know, normally it would be her husband would speak first, but now she's not under the husband, she's under the son. So then, even though she's superior, still he's the protection. He's the support. So he speaks first, then she speaks. Then if there was anybody else, then Bhima and everybody else would speak. Right? Does that make sense? Because otherwise, the mother speaks first, that means she's independent. If she's independent, then where's the relationships? Right? So the point is because dependency makes the relationships increase. Independence makes relationships decrease. That's why a man who's with women then has to show that he's dependent. Right? Even if he's not. Right? That's the rule of the Shastra. Because then relationship is there. He acts independent. Then where's the relationship? Right? Women have a relationship with men because they're dependent upon them. So in their mind, therefore, men have a relationship with them because they're dependent upon them, right? Women are prayojan, they're need. So therefore, if you have need, you interact. No need, you don't interact. So when you show independence, you have no need, means no relationship, therefore insecurity, therefore fight. Yes.
Or is it that independence is
the
same thing attractive?
How is it that independence is attractive? Independence is attractive different ways. Independence is that I am, you know, of course, the standard one. I am God, so therefore I am the supreme control and enjoyer. Independence, and there's freedom, which can be coming up from the mode of ignorance, meaning freedom means I don't have to worry about anything, so no troubles. Right? So passion and ignorance there, then that can make it attractive. Mode of goodness can make it attractive. independence will mean that I'm not bound. But the point is if you want something, you have to take care of it. Nourishing is how a relationship works, right? You have something, you have to take care of it. You have a house, you have a relationship with if you take care of it, right? So therefore, if you have a family, you have a relationship because you take care of it. But the independence is what allows you to do it well. Because the dependent will always be biased because of their need. Independent can be not biased. But not biased doesn't mean that it's not biased that goes against the relationship. You know what I'm saying? Relationship always must be supported. Right? Even if the wife is wrong, in a public forum, she's supported. Or in a relationship, she's supported. Because the relationship then is strong. Then, after having done that, then they're confident, then they can hear what they did wrong. But if you say you did wrong and this and that and they're right, then what comes into question is not the right and wrong of the situation, but whether there's a relationship or not. One may say, well, that's not correct, but that's correct for a man to say about a man. But it's not correct for a man to say about a woman, because that's the way they are. Only if they're confident because the relationship is there, then you can discuss anything else. No relationship, no talk. Right? You know, like Shankaracharya, you know, the opposite. He said, first take sannyas, then we'll talk. So with ladies is, first be attached, then we'll talk. You know? Otherwise it doesn't work. So that's the point. It's that you situate yourself in that field, then you're part of that field, then you can talk. Otherwise you're not part of the field, how can you talk? Is that okay? When they had all finished speaking, Vyas said, O amiable one, how shalt thou be saved from the consequence of untruth? Even this is eternal virtue. I will not, O king of the Panchalas, discourse on this before you all. But thou alone shalt listen to me when I disclose how this practice hath been established and why it is to be regarded as old and eternal. There is no doubt that what Yudhishthir has said is quite conformable to virtue. Vaishampayana continued. Then the illustrious Vyas, the master Dwaipayana, rose and taking hold of Drupad's hand, led him to a private apartment. The Pandavas and Kunti and Drishtadyumna of Drishata's race sat there, waiting for the return of Vyas and Drupad. Meanwhile, Dwaipayana began his discourse with illustrious monarch for explaining how the practice of polandry could not be regarded as sinful. So polygamy means with the wife and polandry means with husbands. Okay. So even there's a word for it. So notice here as he's saying, I won't discuss this in front of you because it's an emotional issue. And then if King has any doubt, then he has to go through all this in front of all his juniors. So he says, I won't discuss this in front of there. So if there's something between seniors, it's not for the juniors. It's not their business. They can't say, oh, we have a right to know, or it's they're public persons. Everybody's a public person, you know? Like that. That's so cheap, right? It's the cheapest way of being a busybody to poke your nose in everyone's business. You know, it's like the ultimate, you know, gossips, you know, line, you know, truth and knowledge and, you know, like that. It's gramyakata, but you gotta know, you know, so you find some nice way to gloss it over and make it look like, you know, something honorable, like that, you know. Point is, you can do something about it. They've all spoken, they can't do anything about it. Drupad's still not convinced. So now Vyas, being the senior, goes with Drupad, they'll work it out. Then they'll come back, then it will be explained. Right? Does that make sense? Etiquette. Section 199. Vaishampayana said, Vyas continued, right? But he already gave a point, is that what Yudhishthir says is also correct, And in days of yore, these things were going on. Right? Because he mentioned before, it's obsolete, this, that. Didn't mean that it wasn't correct. You know? He just said, it's just like the cooking that Prabhupada taught to the devotees, you know, back in the 60s and 70s, basically now is obsolete. You can go to any temple and you'll not find it. You can say it's obsolete, but it doesn't mean it's not bona fide. Right? There are people who do cook like that, but you have to go into the houses to find it. Vyas continued, in days of yore, the celestials had once commenced a grand sacrifice in the forest of Naimisha. At that sacrifice, O king, Yama, the son of Vivasvat, became the slayer of the devoted animals. Yama, thus employed in that sacrifice, did not, during that period, O king, kill a single human being. Death had suspended in the world. The number of human beings increased very greatly. You understand? They were doing a sacrifice. And in the sacrifice, then the animals that were sacrificed in the sacrifice, like the Ashwamedha, so the horse is sacrificed. So it says, whatever is the dedicated animal, or here is his devoted animal. So while he was doing that, then he wasn't sitting in his throne, and then nobody was dying in the universe. So, you know, he wasn't sending out his Yamadutas and collecting everybody. Death being suspended in the world, the number of human beings increased very greatly. Then Soma, Chakra, Varuna, and Kuvera, the Sadhyas, the Rudras, the Vasus, and the twin Ashwins, these and other celestials went unto Prajapati, the creator of the universe. Struck with fear for the increase of the human population in the world, they addressed the master of creation and said, alarmed, O Lord, at the increase of human beings on earth, we came to thee for relief. Indeed, we crave thy protection. Hearing these words, the grandsire said, ye have little cause to be frightened at this increase of human beings. Ye are all immortal. It behooveth you not to take fright at human beings. Right? You're celestials. You live forever. What are you worried about? You know, okay, they live a few more years. Don't be so worried. The celestials reply, the mortals have all become immortal. There is no distinction now between us and them, right? Okay, it's a social issue. Prestige. Hey, they can do what we do. You know, we did all that yajna like that, and, you know, they're doing nothing. They're just living, you know, like that. Even going to heavenly planet is still prestige, right? You know, you can't get away from it. That's right, wherever you go, no matter how nice it becomes, all these little things that harass you today, though they're small, when you go there, they harass you the same. They just become bigger, right? Vexed at the disappearance of all distinction, we have come to thee in order that thou mayest distinguish us from them. Right? It wasn't that they were worried that, oh, they're going to take over the universe and eat everything or something. No. The Creator then said, the son of Vivasvat is even now engaged in the grand sacrifice. It is for this that men are not dying. But when Yama's work in connection with the sacrifice terminates, men will again begin to die as before. Strengthened by your respective energies, Yama will, when that time comes, sweep away by thousands the inhabitants on earth who will scarcely have then any energy left in them. Right? Because you have a backlog, so whoever was supposed to, then they'll just disappear by thousands. One here, one there. Vyas continued. Hearing these words of the firstborn deity, the celestials returned to the spot where the grand sacrifice was being performed. Right? They left the sacrifice because they were worried. You know, we're doing this grand sacrifice because we're immortal, but hey, all the humans are becoming immortal also. The Mighty One, sitting by the side of the Bhagirathi, saw a golden lotus being carried along by the current. Beholding that golden lotus, they wondered much. Amongst them, that foremost of celestials, namely Indra, desirous of ascertaining whence it came, proceeded up along the course of the Bhagirathi, right? Because you've heard of blue lotuses, white lotuses, who's heard of a golden lotus, right? So that's just floating down the Ganga, right? So it must have been very attractive. So Indra is going to look. And reaching that spot whence the goddess Ganga issues perennially, Indra beheld a woman possessing the splendor of fire. The woman who had come there to take water was washing herself in the stream, weeping all the while. Right? So Ganga issues perennially, right? That's the Gomukh. Right? Up there the water is like ice, right? So there's this girl taking water, bathing herself in the ice water and crying. As the teardrops she shed fell on the stream, they were being transformed into golden lotuses. The wielder of the thunderbolt, beholding that wonderful sight, approached the woman and asked her, "Who art thou, amiable lady? Why dost thou weep? I desire to know the truth. Oh, tell me everything." Vyas continued. The woman thereupon answered, "O Shakra, thou mayest know who I am and why. Unfortunate that I am, I weep. If only, O chief of the celestials, thou comest with me as I lead the way." Right? Okay, you'll only know if you come with me, so she'll take him. "Thou shalt then see what it is I weep for." Hearing these words of the lady, Indra followed her as she led the way. Soon she saw, not far off from where he was, a handsome youth with a young lady seated on a throne placed on one of the peaks of Himavat and playing at dice. Beholding that youth, the chief of the celestials said, "Know, intelligent youth, that this universe is under my sway. Seeing, however, that the person addressed was so engrossed in dice that he took no notice of what he said, Indra was possessed by anger and repeated, I am the Lord of the universe." The youth was none else than the god Mahadev. Seeing Indra filled with wrath, only smiled, having cast a glance at him. At that glance, however, the chief of the celestials was at once paralyzed and stood there like a snake. When the game at dice was over, Ishan addressed the weeping woman, said, "Bring Shakra hither, for I shall soon so deal with him that pride may not again enter his heart." As soon as Shakra was touched by that woman, the chief of the celestial, with limbs paralyzed by that touch, fell down on the earth. The illustrious Ishan, of fierce energy, then said unto him, "Act not, O Shakra, ever again in this way. Remove this huge stone, for thy strength and energy are immeasurable, and enter the hole it will disclose. There await some others possessing the splendor of the sun, and who are all like unto thee." Right? You get it? So the girl touched him, he fell down onto the earth. Then Shiva then addressed him, saying, "Don't behave like this again. Now move this rock aside, because you're so powerful, and there you'll see some others like you." Like that. Indra then, on removing that stone, beheld a cave in the breast of that king of mountains, within which were four others resembling himself. Beholding their plight, Shakra became seized with grief and explained, "Shall I be ever like these?" Right? In other words, four other Indras were sitting in there. Then the god Girisha, looking full at Indra with expanded eyes, said in anger, "O thou of 100 sacrifices, enter this cave without the loss of time, for thou hast from folly insulted me." Thus addressed by the Lord Ishan, the chief of the celestials, in consequence of that terrible imprecation, was deeply pained, and with limbs weakened by fear, trembled like a wind-shaken leaf of a Himalayan fig. Cursed unexpectedly by the god owning a bull for his vehicle, Indra, with joined hands and shaking from head to foot, addressed that fierce god of multiform manifestations, saying, "Thou art, O Bhava, the overlooker of the infinite universe." Oh, it's Bhava, yeah. Hearing these words, the god of fiery energy smiled and said, "Those that are of disposition like thine never obtain my grace." In other words, those that are proud, right? Shiva, those who are humble. That's why they're paisachas, right? Because nobody wants them. So therefore, they're very humble. and therefore they approach Shiva in that way.
He gives them shelter, right?
Having that shelter, they become confident. They may cause trouble for everybody else, but they never cause trouble for Shiva, right? They're always humble before him. These others within the cave had at one time been like thee. Enter thou this cave, therefore, and lie there for some time. The fate of you all shall certainly be the same. All of you shall have to take your birth in the world of men, where, having achieved many difficult feats, and slaying a large number of men, ye shall again, by the merits of your respective deeds, regain the valued region of Indra. Ye shall accomplish all I have said, and much more besides of other kinds of work. Then those Indras of their shorn glory said, we shall go from our celestial regions even unto the region of men, where salvation is obtained to be difficult of acquisition. But let the gods Dharma, Vayu, Maghavat, and twin Ashwinis beget us upon our would-be mother. Fighting with men by means of both celestials and human weapons, we shall again come back into the region of Indra. You're starting to catch who these people are. Yes? No? Yeah. Because so means in the last life they were all Indras, right? So this is all part of the thing. That's why he goes and tells this to them, so the others don't hear it, right? Because otherwise, then they make it all, you know, they may disturb the environment, right? Because everyone knows these are Indras. Who's going to fight with them? Then how are you going to kill all those people in the battlefield? Right? You won't be able to remove the earth from its burden. Vyas continued. We're out of time. Hearing these words of the former Indras, the wielder of the thunderbolt once more addressed that foremost of gods, saying, instead of going myself, I shall, with a portion of my energy, create for myself a person for the accomplishment of the task thou assignest. To form the fifth amongst these. Vishwabhuk, Bhuta Dhaman, Sivi of great energy, Shanti the fourth, and Tejasvin, these, it is said, were the five Indras of old. The illustrious god of the formidable bow, from his kindness, means these are their actual names. You know what I'm saying? Indra is a position, but these are their names. Vishwabhuk, Bhuta Dhaman, Shivi, Shanti, and Tejasvin. Right, so these five were the Pandavas. The illustrious god of the formidable bow, from his kindness, granted unto the five Indras the desire they cherished. He also appointed that woman of extraordinary beauty, who was none else than the celestial Shri, the goddess of grace herself, to be their common wife in the world of men. Right, celestial Shri, not Vishnu Shri. So the celestial Shri, she's Indra's wife. Right, so that's why then she came and she's making the arrangement, because she's arranging for her husband. And we'll hear that this was Draupadi in the previous life where she asked for this boon. To be their common wife in the world of men. Accompanied by all those Indras, the god Ishan then went unto Narayana of immeasurable energy, the infinite, the immaterial, the uncreate, the old, the eternal, and the spirit of these universes, without limits. Narayana approved of everything. Those Indras then were born in the world of men. Hari, Narayan, took up two hairs from his body, one of which hairs was black and the other white. Those two hairs entered the wombs of two of the Yadu race, known by names Devaki and Rohini. One of these hairs, namely that which was white, became Baladev, and the hair that was black was born as Keshava itself, Krishna. Those Indras of old who had been confined in the cave on the Himavat are none else than the sons of Pandu, endued with great strength. And Arjuna amongst the Pandavas, called Savyasachin, using both hands with equal dexterity, is a portion of Shakra. Thus, O King, they who have been born as the Pandavas are none else than those Indras of old. And the celestial Shri herself, who had been appointed as their wife, is this Draupadi, of extraordinary beauty. How could she, whose effulgence is like that of the sun or the moon, whose fragrance spreads for 2 miles around, take her birth in any other than an extraordinary way, namely, from within the earth, by virtue of the sacrificial rites? Right? Because also, Sita, she comes from the earth. So he's pointing out, we're saying from the fire, but the fire is below, from the earth, because this would be a Karmakanda Yajna. So you would make a pit into the ground. There'd be a hole 6 feet deep into the ground. I think 6 feet deep in the ground. That you'll do Karmakanda Yajnas in there, right? If they're above ground, that means it's not Karmakanda, it's for higher elevation, like how we do the Yajnas. It's above ground. So therefore, she's coming from the earth, right? You know, from the fire. So that were for the similarity, because that's how Shri always appears. Right? Unto thee, O King, I cheerfully grant this another boon in the form of spiritual sight. Behold now the sons of Kunti, endued with their sacred and celestial bodies of old. Vaishampayana continues, saying this, that sacred Brahmana, Vyas, of generous deeds, by means of his ascetic power, granted celestial sight unto the king. Thereupon the king beheld all the Pandavas, endued with their former bodies. The king saw them possessed of celestial bodies, with golden crowns and celestial garlands, each resembling Indra himself, their complexions radiant as fire or the sun, decked with every ornament, handsome, youthful, with broad chests and statures measuring about 5 cubits. Endued with every accomplishment, decked with celestial robes of great beauty and fragrant garlands of excellent making, the king beheld them as so many three-eyed gods, Mahadev, Vasus, Rudras, or Adityas themselves. Observing the Pandavas in the forms of those Indras of old, and Arjuna also in the form of Indra, sprung from Chakra himself, King Drupad was highly pleased. The monarch wondered much on beholding that manifestation of celestial power under deep disguise. The king, looking at his daughter, that foremost of women, endued with great beauty, like unto a celestial damsel and possessed of the splendor of fire or the moon, regarded her as the worthy wife of those celestial beings, for her beauty, splendor, and fame. And beholding that wonderful sight, the monarch touched the feet of Satyavati's son, exclaiming, O great Rishi, nothing is miraculous to thee. The Rishi then cheerfully continued, in a certain homage, there was a less... Oh, okay. Okay, so then we'll end here. Okay, so now, when do the... Yeah, today's the last day. When is when do you come back from the Sagar?
16th.
16th. So then that will be... That's Wednesday. Okay, so then it can only be the Thursday after that. 16th is Wednesday. Yeah, so 17th Thursday. Then we can see. It'll either be on the 17th or on the 21st. But if everything's okay, then on the 17th, then we'll start the Mahabharata again. Okay? Like that.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai. Guru Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandini.